Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Duluth Rundown, a podcast focused on the local Twin Ports running scene. My name is Tony Stensland with Tony Stensland Coaching.
And I am Mike Ward with Duluth Timing and Events.
Everyone, thanks for joining us again on the Duluth Rundown podcast, a podcast about running specifically in the Twin Ports area. Mm-hmm. This is episode number 17. I'm joined by my partner in crime, Mr. Mike Ward. Mike, how you doing?
Doing really good. It's March 8th. It's feeling pretty spring-like out there, huh?
Exactly. I was driving back with my family earlier today, and I was just watching the temperature in the car as it was kind of climbing and climbing. It was interesting as we cruised through Superior. I think I saw 56, 58, something like that.
Wow.
And then when we crossed the bridge and we got into Duluth, it dropped quite a bit. It was like 44. It was a lot warmer in Superior.
The wind or something.
Must have been somehow the wind coming off the water or something. I'm not entirely sure, but because I was in the car, so it's harder for me to tell.
Right.
But watching those numbers plummet as it came into Duluth was interesting. But still, 44 at this time of the year, even 44, wow. But I know it's a little warm. That's pretty nice. Nice to see all that melt.
I don't want to speak too soon, but like the forecast, you know, is kind of looking like we might be over the deep winter, you know.
So you know what that optimism is, Mike, and kind of keeping it related with the podcast. That's the runner optimism right there. That's what we're hoping. You're not even considering the fact that we could have one, maybe two, who knows, maybe three more blizzards.
Yeah, right.
In the next, you know, 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah.
But nope, it's been nice. The forecast looks pretty good. It's going to be good the rest, you know.
It's funny how it is too. Like, you know, I love winter trail running, and this winter has just been immaculate.
It's been great. Yeah.
But then you hit that point where, you know, the winter trails is kind of not so good anymore. Yeah. Do a few runs on the lake walk, you know, on roads and stuff, and it's hard to look back and think, like, maybe this winter yet, you know, the trails will shape back up and I won't have to run the road miles, you know. And, like, you don't think about that. It's like, right. No, I'm just, it's looking towards summer, looking towards spring.
Exactly. And it's, so we're kind of, we'll be getting into that, what they call shoulder season, yeah. Where it gets way too muddy. The trails are really bad.
Mm-hmm.
But the roads are kind of like those wet. It's all the melt is all over the road. So you're just, the back of your legs are all spotted up, you know, with dirt uh-huh. and mud and water and everything. And that shoulder season kind of, it might, I wonder if it's going to last a little longer this year than normal. I hope not. It's mm-hmm. nice when it kind of goes away quickly, but hopefully it doesn't last a long time.
Well, we have such a big snowpack too that it's going to take a long time to melt it all.
That's what I was wondering, because that big snow, that all that early snow we got early was great for the trails. Mm-hmm. It got set up really nicely.
Yeah.
The groomers that the cogs have for on the single track has been it really helped a lot, and that big deep base firmed up nicely. That was pretty sweet. And like I say, hopefully it doesn't make it a sort of a bad thing in the end of the season. We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, should we pop into some race results here?
Yeah, let's get into kind of the traditional part of the podcast here.
All right. So two race results from the last weekend, I guess, which, by the way, this is our shortest ever two podcasts, because last one
podcast 16
was late.
It was a little longer, yep.
But now we're back on track. So it's only been two weeks. But we only have two results anyways. The first one is an inaugural first year event in Moose Lake. So, you know, kind of outside Duluth, but close enough. A lot of Duluthians down there. Trail race called the Frozen Moose. They had a 5 mile and a 3 hour fixed time option. So 3 hour race was won by Wynn Davis with a total of 24 miles. Wynn is definitely, you know, not surprising if he's winning a race of that sort of distance. That's definitely like his wheelhouse. Competes in places pretty well at a lot of races in the area. Same with Laurel Sipe on the lady side. I think she lives in the Twin Cities, but definitely does a lot of races in the Duluth area. Trail specialist, ultra marathon specialist. She won the 3 hour for the ladies side with 20 miles. And so definitely nice job to Wynn and Laurel. The 5 mile race was won by Tom Anderson from Cloquet, Minnesota with a 42:48. And then Laura Seitz out of Duluth third overall, but she won the ladies division with a 50.05. So looked to be a pretty fun event. Yeah, talked to a few people who said there was a good time, good trails, well put on. So
nice.
I think that race will continue on into the future, the Frozen Moose. The next race that we have results for is, it's not just a pure running race. It's called the Stride, Ride, and Glide Triathlon. So run, bike, ski. Ben Cogger from Duluth wins it, 41.58. And then Christy Nixon, also of Duluth, I believe, wins the ladies' side with a 52.09. And it appeared that there was a team option, too. The first place team was called Jerry's Team. So, nice. Nice job. Upcoming races, we just have a few. I get the sense that we're kind of getting into the running season. And just looking at the race calendars, definitely in the Twin Cities too, and there's a lot of races in March in the Twin Cities. Looking just at Duluth and the surrounding area, the next race is on March 14th, which is this next coming Saturday. One of the Grandma's Marathon suite of races called the St. Fantasy 4K in Hermantown. So really fun event, you know, kind of the Shamrock St. Paddy's Day theme, but. You know, I think it's decently competitive, and I believe they're doing chip timing this year, so should be a little bit more competitive, perhaps. Yep. We'll see.
Yep.
The next day is definitely on the other side of the spectrum. Even, you know, Fantasy's more of a fun run style, I think, but the Shamrock Pub Shuffle, very laid back, definitely not even really a race, kind of like a drinking activity, if anything else, and that's being moved to the Lincoln Park Craft District, I know, this year. So
okay.
Out west, that is March 15th, so next Sunday, and actually I'm going to be a pace group leader for that, so I'll be out there. It should be fun.
Nice.
And then the last race, you know, upcoming in the next 3 weeks is the Mustache March Run 5K. That is on Saturday, March 21st. Race starts at 5 p.m. I'm the race director for it, so I have a mustache right now. So excuse the shameless plug. But, yeah, I think this is, you know, a great opportunity to get an early season 5K in. The course is going to be in awesome shape this year because by Fickers, last year was really muddy. It was under construction, and now it's really wide.
Yeah.
Super nice pavement. Weather's looking good, you know, this far out already, and you know, chip timing, we have awards and stuff, so I'm hoping that some fast guys and gals come out. And
yeah, that's having watched that, right, I took part in it once, but actually before you took it over, Mike, I took part in it, but having watched it the last handful of years, it's a really cool race, really fun, and one of the better post race atmospheres are in the area for sure.
Yeah I'm looking forward to it, so definitely come on out to that one, or really any of the three, or all three. I mean, they're kind of all on separate days, and good early season racing for sure. So
the only caveat we should explain on your Mustache March Run is you have to wear a mustache, whether it's real or fake.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, I mean, you don't have to. Say have to. There's air quotes involved in that, but yeah, you're encouraged to.
Yeah. And I have a copious amount of fake mustaches, so there's no reason not to, really.
There you go, exactly.
So that's about all we got for upcoming races in the Duluth region. Again, if you are looking to do some races, Twin Cities, I just kind of eyeballed the list. There is a lot of good races coming up. So,
well, you do bring up a point as we continue on, probably around episode 19 or 20 or so, we're going to have a long list of results and upcoming races.
Mm-hmm.
This section of the podcast will extend in terms of time quite a bit.
Yeah. But for now, we can move right along. Trails report. I guess I haven't been on the trails for a while. It's been so warm in Duluth that I just don't think they're in great shape. I don't have any firsthand evidence of that, so I'll just kind of leave it at that, but I guess I do want to remind everybody that there are several options if you do want to look for details on trail conditions besides this podcast. For instance, one would be Superior Hike and Trail Association website, shta.org, for Superior Hike and Trail. The City of Duluth Parks and Recs Department, they sometimes post updates and things of that nature. COGS always does ongoing updates. And if you're on Facebook, this new, it's not really new now, but Duluth Trail Conditions Facebook group has been a really cool resource. And so a lot of options to look into the Duluth area to see what people or entities, organizations are posting about, you know, the trail and if it's good to go or stay off.
I think a big thing when you're looking for trail conditions, you're looking for immediate info. So you want it as up to date as possible, like within the day or a couple of days or within the hour. And that new Facebook page is really nice in terms of the immediacy of it. And then COGS's Twitter page does a pretty nice job too. Every once in a while, it might be, you know, a couple of days, a couple, 3-4 days in between updates. But typically they do a nice job of updating relatively quickly.
Yeah. So. And the COGS Twitter, they have several different accounts. So you can really narrow in on not only like, I'm on a bike trail, but what part of town, what specific trail. And
Exactly. They have their own, like, Hartley. COGS Hartley is a different Twitter than COGS Lester, which is, so you can kind of specifically find exactly what park you want to go to and take a look there on Twitter.
And I guess another reminder just kind of popped in my head is the annual kind of annual Duluth trail closure.
Yes.
It's probably around the horizon, you know, and
that shoulder season that we talked about, that the city will close them all down, and rightfully so, because they're going to be a muddy mess, you know, or the snow will be way too soft. And so it's going to happen here soon.
On a coach's corner, I'm excited about this one because my personal, my training's kind of kicking in I'm excited to hear what you have to say for Coach's Corner, Tony.
So, yeah, later on, we recorded our interview section before this part, so you're going to hear it in the opposite way that we recorded today. But we were talking with Greg Robertson about, we mentioned a little bit about strides and some drills, and he, Greg had talked about doing some strides in his runs, whether it's before a run or in the middle of the run or after a run. And I thought, well, Mike even kind of suggested that we could talk a little bit about that in the Coach's Corner, because it is something that I think more of us could stand to incorporate, especially drills. But we'll talk a little more specifically about strides today and why they're important and how to do them. And typically what I would do is before a workout, I would do the strides pre-run. So as a warm-up process, or on a normal Monday 5-mile run, just to kind of accumulate miles, I would maybe do the strides post run in that situation, but you could do it as a warm-up as well.
Can you start, like, what are strides?
Yeah, exactly. So that's, so we'll talk about that. So
okay,
a stride basically is, it's, I would say it's, you can do them on a football field, which is really nice, and roughly 100 meters of running. And what you want to do is you want to start out relatively slow, kind of, I don't know, half pace, you know, slowly build up speed until you get to maybe 20, 30 meters. You start to get close to top end speed. You're not trying to reach top end speed. You're not shooting for that 100%. How fast can I run 100 meter effort, but you're getting pretty fast. And then you kind of hold that speed. Then in the final roughly 20 meters-ish or so, kind of slow back down again to that little bit of a jog. And then once you get past that 100 meters, 115, 120 meters kind of a thing, football field length, you know, you pause a little bit, kind of catch your breath, wait, I don't know, 30 seconds, whatever you need to wait, and you turn around and you just do it again. Same thing. Again, starting out slow, building up to a fast speed, like Greg had mentioned, I think 85, 90, 95% maybe, something like that. And holding that pace. And what you want to do is pay attention to the feel and the fluidity and your form and everything, how that feels. Really what I think of strides as a neuromuscular training thing. You're not going to gain any fitness from a stride. The idea is to kind of work on that fluid and efficient form. The analogy I often make is, as a warm-up specifically, is when someone, you know, plays piano or any kind of musical instrument, they'll sit down and they might place scales first. It's a as a warm up drill. Strides are kind of like that. It's a warm up drill to kind of get the neuromuscular system kind of fired. So your brain and your nervous system and your muscles are all kind of on the same page of this is how the movement should be today. So specifically before a workout, it's really nice that you get that speed feel. And again, that's kind of in quotes, that feel of running fast. You get that kind of locked into your brain and your nerve endings and everything. So mm-hmm. that's kind of what a stride is for. And then with regards to drills, you've seen, or you did these when you were in track in high school, you've seen track kids do all these little drills. They have different names, A skip, B skip, C skip, that kind of a thing. There's a million of them. There's a million different drills that you can do. Again, that's kind of neuromuscular idea and getting in kind of, I would call it in tune with your body and also just simply warming up, getting all of your joints warmed up, getting the muscles and tendons kind of warmed up. My best advice for learning how to do those would be go to YouTube. There's a million different things on YouTube that you can find.
Like running drills.
Running search. Drills. Just search running drills on YouTube. You could type in a skip if you wanted, and you'd specifically find some a skip drills to do, or you can just find running drills. There's some really, really cool ones. I actually really kind of enjoy finding all the different ones to do. Mm-hmm. One of my favorites is from, it's called Kenyan Running Drills, and it's a Kenyan coach. His name is Timo Limo. And it's a great name. He has some kids that are from New Zealand that he's teaching. They're on a trip. This New Zealand school brought their running team up to Kenya as a cool trip, and they're doing some drills on the track. And that's a really cool one. I really like watching that one because you see them kind of struggle at first, and they do some pretty complicated stuff, and they get really, really good at it. That's one of my favorite ones to see, and I've copied some of those myself and done them myself. And so a lot of times what I'll do in the summertime, when I'm starting to really train and doing workouts, I'll run up to the track and I'll do some drills and do some strides and I'll run back home. And that's it's about a mile and a half to the UMD track from my house. So there's 3 miles of running plus some drills. And that'll be one of my runs for the day.
And that's not quite like a workout per se, but you're working on.
It's exactly not a workout. Yeah, exactly.
Easy effort, no recovery type thing.
Long recovery, yeah.
Like you don't need it to recover from activity like that.
Exactly, right? Okay. Exactly. A lot of times I'll do them on like Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And my workout days would be like a Tuesday, Thursday or something like that. Uh-huh. The drill days I would do on my easy days. And sometimes I'll run twice on the Monday, Wednesday, Friday kind of a thing too. Right. And so my easy run that morning might be that. Run the mile and a half to the track, do the drills, do the strides, mile and a half back home. There's 3 miles. I might do a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And that's my simple run for the day, and then later in the day I might be another simple run, but maybe a little more distance or something.
Right, like a jog.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that. Yeah.
Another way to utilize drills and strides would be on like a recovery week or something like that, where you have a week without any workouts at all. That's another a good time, because when you're doing drills and strides, the intent, there's really not a lot of intensity and there's not a lot of distance and duration,
right?
So that's another good time to do those too.
An off week.
Yeah, exactly. Yep,
cool. So
they're very valuable to do, honestly. Quite frankly, all of us need to do them more often.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just good fundamentals. Another analogy that I often make is baseball players, when they're hitting, even professionals, they'll hit off of a tee, you know?
Uh-huh.
Well, that ball is not it's stationary. It's not moving. It's not changing speeds. It's not breaking away from them. It's not coming in at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
It's sitting right there. And all they're trying to do is hone their swing.
Right.
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 Then they move to what's called a soft toss. After the tee, they'll move to a soft toss, where a guy on the side just kind of tosses up a ball. And now they got hit a moving ball, but it's not, again, not coming at them, changing speeds, breaking, doing all this. Then they go to a pitching machine. Then they go to live pitching. But they start off with a tee. And even at the professional ranks, you know, that's, again, honing their swing, neuromuscular kind of a thing. That's kind of what drills are.
So the idea is that on a tee or with a 100-mile-an-hour curveball or something, like the biomechanical swing is
the same.
Almost the same. Yeah,
exactly.
As close to the same as possible.
Because it's a neuromuscular, like training the body how that specific movement works.
So like when you're doing drills and strides, you want that form, you're running biomechanics to be exactly like mile 12 of a half marathon or something.
Yep. Yep, exactly.
That's how you make the drills work for you.
Yep, exactly.
Nice.
Yep. Cool.
Well, I think that's an easy way for everyone to implement, is just to either do the strides before the workout, or you know, spice in their daily run or off day run, you know.
And it can be a tricky thing to do. I think number one, you know, might seem like almost a little kind of quote unquote too serious to want to, I'm just going to go and do this kind of thing. Somebody might see me doing these weird drills kind of a thing. It's just easy to just go out your door, run, come back home, you're done. Yeah. That's 99.9% of us do that.
Right.
And that's totally fine. But if you really want to, I would say, make some improvements, and it could also almost be, you could think of it too, I think, as a almost an injury prevention.
Sure.
A little bit, so you can kind of get that in tune with the body a little bit more and get that nice fluid form down a little bit better. I think it would be good for that too. Yeah.
The mind-body connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So get outside of your comfort zone a little bit and practice some drills and strides.
Nice.
Yeah.
Done. Moving on to a gear review. Do you have a gear review, Tony?
No, but I'm just super excited to hear yours, because I might even chime in just because.
Well, you should, because you probably have more to say than I, too. This is, I think, well, first of all, it's not a true gear review, because I don't have these shoes, but I've seen them, social media ablaze with this new concept shoe from Hoka 1-1 called the Hoka 10-9, and it's a very specific trail running shoe, specific for downhill races, where the base of the heel of the shoe is flared out like several inches, it looks like. And it looks just so bizarre, and I thought it might be a I mean, we've gotten into some pretty good discussions about, you know, Nike and the Alpha controversy, and is that cheating or not, and I think this is kind of in that same vein, where, you know, Hoka is using technological advances to design a shoe that looks completely different than any other shoe out there.
Yeah.
You know, totally bizarre, where you say, like, people actually running that thing, you know, and, but does it make the downhill running easier? Is it a performance enhancer, you know, and therefore should that be allowed in downhill trail races, you know? And I think that's what I initially think about, is like, oh, this is just another one. But on the flip side, like, what's saying that they can't make a shoe that has like a extended heel to make downhill running easier? I mean, if it doesn't add, or like, you know, like springs or something like that, like to return the energy, what's that fine line, you know?
Yeah. I don't know if you haven't seen it yet, Google image that, you know, as soon as, like, you can.
T-N-N-I-N-E. Yeah. Like, spelled out 10-9.
Yeah, exactly. Like the number 10 spelled out and the number 9 put together in one word. It's a crazy looking shoe, and it doesn't look real. It totally looks fake, but it's actually real. It's $250, which is a lot, but I guess now all the cool shoes are $250 these days.
Yeah.
Yeah, who knows? I can't quite get my head around it. I've looked at the pictures of the folks on the Hoka website running down the hill. I don't know if you looked at that. They look pretty natural. They look, when they're running, they look like, oh, that shoe's not getting in the way. It's, granted, it's just a still picture on the front of a website, so who knows? But I had to think about, when I thought about it, first saw it, I thought, that's ridiculous. And then I thought about it, and I kept thinking about it and thinking about it. I thought, okay, if, let's say, that foam is very soft behind there, and you said inches behind the heel of the foot that the shoe extends, I mean, it might be like 4 or 5 inches beyond the heel of the foot that the shoe itself extends. It's crazy. It's like a big spoiler.
It's bizarre. And it's like an elf shoe or something. I mean, it looks just bizarre.
Yeah, you know? It's really strange. I thought, well, if that foam is relatively soft so that flexes pretty well, maybe it won't get in the way as much as you would initially think.
Yeah.
And then it reminded me that, so Adidas and Ultra, and Ultra still might do it. Adidas has done this with trail shoes in the past, because I know, because I had them. They had these little, they called them a spoiler on the back, and the rubber would extend out a little bit beyond the heel. And Ultra does it too. And they did with the Lone Peak. I don't know if they still do.
I mean, we're talking like less than an inch.
Right.
Right.
And it's just the rubber. It's not the foam in those two shoes. It was just the rubber. So I remember the idea thinking, okay, I get why you do that, because it kind of adds a little bit of drag on a downhill behind your heel. And theoretically, that would make some sense in terms, so you are a little more likely to stay upright. Your heel's not going to slip out from under in front of you like you would on ice.
Right. Like, so, banana peel.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's just a teeny little piece of rubber. So the physics, I just can't quite picture in my head of that little thing having an effect. Now we look at the 10-9, and with that massive amount, it's not only extends beyond, but it's also much wider than the foot too. If you look at from the top down on some of the pictures, it's really wide. So there's a massive amount of substance there behind you. So now I'm like, I get it. Mm-hmm. It looks, if you thought when you first saw a Hoka, how goofy they looked.
Yeah.
Now imagine that, remember that feeling, and then extend that beyond. Because it's turning the shoe world upside down again.
I saw a photo of like a regular Hoka trail runner next to the new 10-9.
Okay.
And then it made the regular, you know, I think the Speed Goat or something, uh-huh. you know, like a big bulky trail runner.
Right.
And it makes that look like a Nimbus or like just the most minimal, tiny shoe.
That's funny.
And like you said, even just the heel, the size of the heel. I mean, like I think these would work as snowshoes almost. Like it's just so much of a footprint.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Yeah. So my guess is it probably works because they wouldn't put it out on the market. You know, they test these. They make prototype after prototype after prototype, right. you know, before they ever put these out on the market.
Science. Yeah. You know, scientific testing.
Right.
For lack of a better term, I guess.
Yeah. So who knows? It must work. I can't wait to see one in person.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see somebody running in them and get their feedback because right now it's all speculation and who knows. But.
And you think they're going to sell or is this just like I remember in business school they call it a loss leader, you know, the product that doesn't make any money, but it lifts up the business or something. I mean, is this a loss leader for Hoka where it's just to say, hey, we're doing technological advancements, we're pushing the envelope, we don't care what it looks like. So, or are people really going to buy these just because they want to run downhill fast? I mean,
people will buy them. There's always the early adapters who want all the newest things. They're curious and they want to try it. And so there will be enough to make version 2 and version 3 and version 4? Who knows? I mean, there's been plenty of experimentation in the shoe world for forever. And if anything, you know, Nike's always been at the forefront of that. They're not afraid to put new things out on the market. They've done that forever. Eric Norgren, if you're listening, I know that you're thinking about the Nike Rift. He has a pair. So the Nike Rift was a shoe that had a split toe. The big toe was separated from the rest, the all four toes.
Yeah.
Kind of like a Vibram two fingers, if you would.
Right.
And, well, what are you going to wear for socks? So Nike sold a special sock to fit with that Nike Rift shoe. So, you know, that kind of stuff has been done.
Yeah.
I don't know if they ever made a version 2 of the Nike Rift on that or not, if it just was one season. So, and this was probably early 2000s when this shoe occurred.
Right.
So it's been out there, that, or that kind of thing has been done where they throw stuff out on the market and see what happens.
Now, do you think the answer is like, who knows, obviously, like just from your last comment, but do you think in 2-3 years, every trail shoe is going to have a big old, I mean, just something behind it, you know, I think that it looks so bizarre, but you could see like other shoe companies, like maybe doing a smaller one or something along the same lines with foam back there, not just a rubber piece. Do you see that happening?
Billy, you're putting me on the spot. So you're really going to, again, I really just want to answer with that. Maybe, maybe not. I will go out on a limb and I will say, no, we won't see more of it. But I would have said that about Hoka when it first came out too, and it's a huge company now. I would have said that about Ultra when I first saw them too, and they have hung around and done and found a niche.
Yeah.
And so
not even both of those are getting into the mainstream, like any marathon.
Right. Marathons. There were some Ultras out there on the Olympic trials.
Wow.
So I don't know. I'm still going to say no on this shoe, I'm fully aware that I might be wrong on that one.
Just seeing the pictures, you have to say no.
Mm-hmm.
But so if anyone's out there and you haven't seen the Hoka 10-9 and you're looking for just a good laugh, like that was the first emotion, was just like belly laugh.
Yeah.
it looks so goofy.
I think I texted it to you and you're like, that has to be photoshopped.
Yeah, I didn't believe it. And I was like, oh, this is a funny joke. Like, haha. And then I started seeing it on, like, you know, Runner's World and some of the actual publications.
Yeah.
Like, you got to see this.
And that's another thing that I found interesting about the 10-9. It was very hush. Like, all of a sudden, boom, like the day before it came out, maybe a couple of days prior before it actually was released, now all of a sudden you see it on some social media. Wow, they were pretty quiet about that.
I think it's going a little viral though, and that's that's why I think maybe that was Hoka's, like, they're playing their cards right. And
you this might be right about that.
But you know, you never know too. And each shoe manufacturer, they want to emulate Nike and have that new cutting edge product, right? I mean, why wouldn't you want to have that? So
yeah. Well, we as a society, we love options. We love as many options and choices as we can have. That's part of our privilege, as it were, to be a modern consumer. So, and that leads to why Hokas and Ultras and stuff have been able to hold on, because there's startup shoe brands that have been going on for a long, long, long time.
Right.
Usually they fail after a couple of years. But lately they've been able to hang around.
You think there's really people out there? Gosh, there's nothing on the market that is good for downhill running.
Right. Exactly. Well, like I said, remember when you used to joke about you need a shoe for when the wind is coming out of the northwest or something, all these little specific things where we're kind of getting to that point. You know, it's really funny.
It is funny. So. Yeah, check that out, Hoka 10.9. What I'm into, moving on. I know for sure what I'm into lately, and I feel like we mentioned it at least like once every episode, but Lightspeed Lift. I've been going there a bunch. I've been doing workouts. I'll say personally, my next race is coming up, Zumbro Midnight 50 Miler, and I have this little kind of 6-week training program, and after that is, you know, Fickers 5K and some road speedy type things. And so anyways, I'm really building up my mileage, building up my fitness, and again, Lightspeed Lift, going to the movement center once a week has played I think a pretty integral part of just like feeling fit, feeling good. I've been running really fast on the treadmill with the 25% of my body weight off. Like, I'm talking faster than I've ever run, ever. Like, faster than my fastest 400, like, really fast. And granted, I didn't think I could run that fast, and it was prescribed to me.
Right.
You know, Malcolm said, run this. And I'm like, I don't think I can, you know. You just go out and you do it, and that's kind of the fun part of workouts anyways, too.
Yeah.
But, I've been going there once a week, and I think it really helps, you know, just that speed day.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I'm into lately. And here's another shout out to Lightspeed Lift. We talk about them all the time, but it's an awesome resource to have here in Duluth for sure.
So. It is, absolutely is. Yep.
Yeah,
for sure.
What about you? Anything that you're into, Tony?
You know what? With the trials, I was really super into the trials, and still kind of am when following up on some of the people's reports, their race reports here lately.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
But it was fun. That was a really fun weekend, and you know, for a while, I was watching the 2016 trials on YouTube for a little bit, and the 2012 and the 2008 trials, and some of the, trying to find some of the older races and check out some of those kind of things. So that was really fun.
Some history.
It's a little bit of history.
Yeah.
I remember, I had forgotten about that guy and Dan Brown and some of these other guys. You know, Dan Brown, I think, was fourth that one year in 2012 or something. But he was a really good runner. And, you know, some of the guys that you remember, you're like, oh yeah, that they didn't make the team, but they were just really solid runners from back in the day.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yep.
And that's actually a good segue to our last segment, the shout-out.
Yes.
And I guess we're kind of doing a shout-out to Marathon Trials, or the more so maybe the Marathon Trials watch party at the Gearing Up for Grandma's event, which was last weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, that was super fun. A major shout-out just to the folks at Grandma's and to the Grandma Sports Garden as well for hosting the whole event, but the Gearing Up for Grandma's event has been going on for a long time, and to my mind, this last one was the best one that I've kind of seen. Started out with a little group run. The participation for the whole deal was incredible. They had their breakout sessions. They had a talk from Jim with Tortoise and Hare about shoes and gear, little breakout sessions for different topics. So you can go to like a stretching for runners and nutrition and self-defense and some yoga and lots of just cool stuff that you could go and get some great information from people. And then the viewing party, you know, granted that's going to be once every 4 years kind of deal, but I hope they do it again.
That was fun.
It was amazing as a runner geek to have an entire sports bar dedicated just to running, because all the TVs and a big screen were showing the trials.
Yeah.
And every table in there was full. I interviewed Shane Bauer, the executive director of Grandma's Marathon, and unfortunately, I lost that. I forgot to save it, or I didn't save it properly or something, but I had an interview with him that we were hoping to record on the podcast, and he was really thrilled with the turnout.
Cool.
So shout out to all the people who attended, and thanks for coming down to that. shout out to Grandma's for putting on that really cool event. That, like I said, that was my favorite one that I've been to.
Yeah. Good. It was fun. That was the first one that I've been to, actually.
Yeah.
I had a great time, and that's my shout out to, well, not to the event per se, but to Cindy Cahus, who yes. was an event participant,
yep.
a local runner,
yep.
and just one of the interviews that I got for the day. And you and I, you know, set out, like, let's interview some people and get some boots on the ground, so to speak. So here's the interview with Cindy. All right. Hey, this is Mike with the Duluth Rundown. And yeah, I'm here at the Gearing Up for Grandma's event, and I have an interview subject. Cindy, hi. Can you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Cindy Hughes. That's it. That's my cool. name.
Cindy, how has this event been so far? Did you run this morning?
Yes, I did. I ran 5 miles. It was wonderful, beautiful. Every time I run on the lake walk, I'm like, look at what we have here in Duluth. We are so lucky. Yeah, we're really lucky. I've lived here 4.5 years, and I'm just so thrilled with how great, how easy and convenient it is to run here in the winter in Duluth.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there was a pretty big group of people that came out today. Were you running with a big group?
Well, I'm part of Tony Stensland's spring training group. So some of the people in the group ran, I think, 5, and some did 8. I was with the 5 milers. We're supposed to run 6 today. It's our recovery week, but he said we could do 5.
Nice. And another part of this event, besides the breakout groups, is the marathon trials. Are you going to stick around and watch the marathon trials here?
I did my shopping. I did my running. I did my eating. I did my shopping. So I might be going home after this. I'm not sure.
Nice. And final question. What sort of races do you have on your race calendar upcoming, Cindy?
Well, I am going to run the Geary Bjorklund Half. It's my fourth half marathon. And it'll be, I'm sorry, it's my fourth race, the Geary Bjorklund one. And then in September, I'm running the Ely Half, which is super fun. I ran that last year. It was so much fun. Hilly, hard, but really fun to be running along and then seeing people portaging canoes.
Uh-huh.
And then I also signed up for the what's the fall race on the Superior Hiking Trail? Last year I ran the Terribly Tough 10K.
Wild Duluth.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to do the half.
Cool.
So I'm really excited. So this year I'm running 3 half marathons.
Are you a half marathon specialist?
I wouldn't say that, no.
Very
maybe,
cool.
Maybe after this year I will say that.
You're on track to being a half specialist.
Yeah. I really like the trail running. We're so lucky here in Duluth also to be able to have so many easy opportunities to do that.
Yeah,
so,
seriously. Yeah. Very cool. Well, thanks, Cindy, for being on the Duluth Rundown podcast.
Thanks,
and good to
Mike.
Hear from you. Thanks, Cindy, for doing a brief interview with the Duluth Rundown. And that kind of wraps up our rundown portion of episode 17. So next up is our interview with Greg Robertson.